Grupo de mujeres en Alternativa Latinoamericana.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
En Ontario, Canadá.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, I am Siegfried. And over the last few weeks, of course, we've been talking about my book, Proletarian God, Building the Socialist Future. And of course, I've done a series of shows on that, various elements of the book, various chapters of the book, going through really what the book's all about. And of course, proletarian God, meaning the collective power that the working class has as the builder of human civilization. You know, if human labor basically is the foundation of civilization. You know, the working class is its foundation. Of course, it's been exploited throughout history by essentially parasitical forces that, you know, have been feeding off of that, whether that is the slave-owning class or a feudal class or a capitalist class, which effectively has exploited human labor in the name of profit. Now, this week, I do actually want to continue talking about that, but I believe it's very important for me to discuss I really want to outline my thoughts on the so-called Brexit vote in the UK, which has polarized hearts and minds, not only in Britain and Europe, but around the world. You know, I feel it is kind of my duty to comment on this, which seems to be on just about everybody's lips right now, because it really has shaken things up. It's changed a lot of things. The people of the UK have voted in a referendum to leave the European Union. The Prime Minister has announced his resignation. The EU itself is scrambling to contain the damage, and global markets are in turmoil as a result. Now, this popular vote, this exercise of self-determination on the part of the majority of British citizens, has not only aroused the ire of international markets and mainstream political commentators, but has also drawn fire from many progressive-minded people who view this decision as racist, xenophobic, primarily dedicated to try to kick immigrants out of Britain, closed-minded, and they view this decision as fundamentally stupid in this era of globalization, interconnection, and global trade. I've even heard various commentators lamenting the so-called failings of democracy itself, essentially arguing that many of the people who voted to leave the EU were dangerously stupid and should not have been allowed to vote in the first place. You know, I've heard that. I've heard commentators argue that. Many left-wing commentators argued that leaving the EU would only boost racist and anti-immigrant political forces, essentially arguing that the European Union somehow represented a bulwark against fascism in the far right, which I'm going to explain is questionable at best. Others argue that the EU, an undemocratic federation of capitalist states, you know, ruled from Brussels by basically unrepresentative bureaucrats and trade bodies and what have you, they argue that the EU could somehow be reformed in a progressive direction, and that leaving would allow, that basically leaving the EU would be a blow to working class solidarity and internationalism. Once again, I'm going to explain how that is not only questionable, that's outright wrong. I want to argue that positions like this are fundamentally wrong, and that leaving the European Union was truly the only option for the British working class. I understand that's not a terribly popular argument to be made at this time, but I'm going to argue my case here. Those who disagree with me will no doubt point to the unmistakable rise in racist violence since the referendum. An increase of 115%, according to the British police. You know, there's been attacks on migrants of all stripes. That includes migrants from Eastern Europe, who might not be people of color, but they're still certainly perceived as outsiders in the UK by various racist elements. The racist tendencies of major elements within the Leave vote are well known, and the crimes are beyond doubt. But it does not follow, and this is really what I want to argue here, it does not follow that if we oppose their reactionary xenophobia, that we must love the EU and embrace the continental fortress Europe that thousands of migrants die each year trying to enter, and which cages and deports thousands more who make it in. You know, they recently signed a deal with Turkey to keep Syrian refugees out, and they're deporting Syrian refugees en masse to Turkey, which, as we should be very clear on now, is not a safe country for them. The EU has openly backed fascist political forces in Ukraine and facilitated the rise of many other fascist movements through economic policies of austerity that have the effect of turning working class people against one another amid chronic poverty and insecurity. The European Union is frankly both racist and xenophobic, and does not represent an anti-racist alternative to fascist-minded groups like UKIP, which the vast majority of Leave voters did not support anyway. Indeed, UKIP, a political party of former Conservative Party supporters, solely dedicated to taking Britain out of the EU, effectively no longer has a reason for existing in the aftermath of this vote. The British far right will have a much harder time presenting itself as champions of British national self-determination in the face of the European colossus now that the Brexit has succeeded, and it is doubtful that they can maintain their momentum politically. As I mentioned, there has been an increase in anti-immigrant and racist violence in the wake of the referendum, as fascists claim credit for the victory of the Leave campaign and take it as proof that the silent majority of Britons support them, which they do not. These brutal attacks do not justify EU membership. It means that anti-fascist forces in Britain have a job to do. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing too many forces stepping up and confronting fascism in the UK, and definitely not from the mainstream left. You do not defeat fascism by returning to the fascist-facilitating, austerity-pushing European Union with your tail between your legs. You defeat fascism by fighting it. The British left has made a colossal error by supporting the European Union and allowing the fascists to position themselves as champions of national self-determination in England. This ground never should have been conceded, and now there must be a concerted struggle to reclaim it. By adopting a kind of paternalistic elitism and not identifying with the working class, learning from the working class, or engaging in the democratic mobilization of the working class, the Labour Party and the mainstream British left organizations have effectively given the fascists the opening they need, allowing them to portray themselves as populists, looking out for the interests of ordinary people. Reversing this damage will be a very difficult process and will require a wholesale abandonment of present left illusions, especially about the European Union. The European Union is no anti-fascist organization. And if you want to stop fascism, the only thing you can do is mobilize working people against it. And that is not what is going on in the UK right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
We'd say that the ideas that they put forward outside football grounds on working class estates have to be combated politically, but also that they've got a physical agenda and that has to be met physically as well. People have to defend themselves against the fascists. They can't just turn the other cheek.
I don't think myself to be lonely. force. But once we agree with them, waving placards and chanting at fascists through megaphones accomplishes absolutely nothing. The only way to stop Nazi scum like the BNP is by physically confronting them and literally kicking them off our streets.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Oi Polloi, British punk band with Bash the Fash, anti-fascist song from 1994. And I should have announced at the beginning, but the song you heard at the beginning of the program was Killing Joke's Pandemonium, also by a British band. And certainly talking about the rise of fascism and xenophobia in places like England, and really throughout Europe, it must be understood that especially in England, you see anti-immigrant sentiment coming from the left as well, you know, from the various positions which the left has been taking, the Labour Party has been taking, for example, on immigration. They're, of course, also framing immigration controls that are effectively xenophobic and shutting out refugees. You know, it's not a contrast between the two. Essentially, you know, liberals are part of this problem as well, and giving fuel to the far right. And they're certainly not doing anything effective to fight against the far right in the UK now. Now, it has to be recognized that the majority of Leave voters in this Brexit referendum were actually working class, poor, and in many cases jobless. For them, Europe did not represent opportunity. It was one more barrier in life. One more obstacle to them controlling even the smallest piece of their own destiny. It's free trade regime. It's mandatory austerity policies, which recently effectively spelled the destruction of the fabric of Greek society. If anybody's been following that story. And imposing these austerity policies from the top down, from Brussels. Overriding the government institutions in various countries throughout the EU and, you know, imposing these policies and effectively making them mandatory throughout the European Union, you know, co-joined with similar long-running policies of the British government. These things were like a ball and chain wrapped around their legs of these working-class people. Those British citizens, wealthy and or privileged enough to enjoy regular visa-free holidays in Spain, visa-free travel to France and professional work contracts in various EU countries, and so on, might complain about the loss of such luxuries through this vote. But for most British workers, they were never in reach to begin with. The personal inconvenience of privileged and mobile sections of the population is of little concern to the working class majority who have seen their jobs disappear, their rents increase, their services slashed, and their pensions cut through the policies of austerity. Market forces and government policy combine to chain these people in place, whether they are jobless youths in inner city Manchester or temporary workers in the economically depressed north, an area which never recovered from the end of the coal industry and the crushing of the 1980s miners' strike by Margaret Thatcher. These people have been denied any meaningful control. These people, like, you know, just like working people throughout Europe, have been denied any meaningful control over their lives. And for them, capitalist Europe, the European Union, was just one more layer of undemocratic power hanging over their heads and ready to crush them at any moment. So they chose to defy both the Tories and the Labour Party, who again and again told them the lie that the EU was the best guarantee of their well-being. For these people, it wasn't about immigration. They had far more concrete things on their mind. These people never received the supposed benefits of EU membership. And now they are being condemned as backward savages by the capitalist media for attempting to reclaim the smallest measure of self-respect. They are now being punished by global market forces, credit rating agencies, and the capitalist classes of Britain and Europe. The British government already threatened, and now looks to be carrying through on that threat, to cut billions of pounds worth of funding to public services if the Brexit vote succeeded. They did not vote the way that capitalism wanted them to vote, and now they're being made to pay the price. There's nothing progressive about this situation. You know, there's nothing progressive about a Remain vote. You know, keep staying in the EU and continuing to submit to imposed austerity policies and global market forces. In this moment of uncertainty and lack of confidence, market forces have led many people to believe that exercise of democracy is stupid and foolish, and that it would have been safer to vote Remain. These people are cowards, nothing more. Cowards who do not understand what self-determination means. Exercising control over one's own affairs as a nation and charting an independent course in this era of global capitalism is not easy. It is painful, and you will suffer for it. Since the Second World War, countries as diverse as Cuba, Vietnam, Chile, Guatemala, Cambodia, Nicaragua, Yugoslavia, Iraq, Grenada, Egypt, Angola, Syria, Mozambique, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and Libya have been bombed, starved, blockaded, sanctioned, invaded, and destroyed because of the independent decisions taken by their people to build a future for themselves free from the coercion of the IMF, the CIA, and the Fortune 500. Alongside the United States, Britain has long played a major role, in the ruthless suppression of independent countries and political movements. British working-class men have a long history of giving their lives on distant battlefields in faraway countries in the name of king and empire, while British capitalist bankers and industrialists reaped fortunes from the toil of proletarians worldwide. Members of my own family fought in those colonial wars, toiled in those factories and mines, and went without health care, running water, and basic sanitation amid TB epidemics. We only gained a measure of reprieve when the Second World War ended and the empire began to crumble. Concessions to working class demands gave us the National Health Service, public pensions, affordable housing, decent wages, and affordable education, and for some, the opportunity for upward mobility. But these were temporary concessions made at a time of crisis. Now the capitalist class is clawing them all back. And European integration played a major role in destroying whatever security we once had as working people. With this referendum, Britain, the former imperial heartland, has moved barely an inch in the direction of self-determination. And already the capitalist system has begun punishing it. While reactionary forces insist that the only solution for proletarians is to start killing each other in a frenzy of xenophobic violence. It's worth pointing out that unlike Canada and the United States, and Australia and places like that, which Britain obviously created these places, these settler colonial societies, but Britain itself is not a settler colonial society. There is a nation there, a very old nation, of which my own family is a part. My own background is Celtic, Norman, Saxon, Danish, amongst others. The inhabitants of the British Isles have always been very diverse. This is nothing new. And these monsters, who want working class people in Britain to believe that they are white, that they are white people, and they must close ranks against these, against immigrants and supposed outsiders who don't look like them. It's those people, those fascists, who are against the interests of the working class in Britain, just as they are against the interests of working class people everywhere. And there's a great tradition of resistance, both to capitalism and to empire, in the British Isles. And it's that tradition that needs to become dominant. It's the tradition that needs to be to rise up and defeat fascism now. And also defeat the capitalist class and the forces that argue that the European Union was a good thing. And that somehow working class people must bow their heads and submit to unaccountable forces that only facilitate their exploitation. And create the conditions for xenophobia and racism in the first place. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Stars hang fire in the nets, in the chaos of cages where the crayfish lie. Where is the fisherman? Where is the boat? Where is the keeper in his carrying coat? I clip some the
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Sting with the Soul Cages. Now, capitalism has registered its disapproval with the Brexit, and it remains to be seen whether the British working class, divided as it is by racism and national chauvinism, will fight on or surrender. Whether they will give in to what capitalism tells them is the safe option, or take another painful step on the arduous march towards self-determination and socialism. In this, they have no choice but to confront the demons of the past. Racism, imperialism, capitalism, monarchy, and colonial and national oppression. All the things that hold them down and hold them back and keep them from realizing their true place and potential in the world. The working people of Britain have long been used as tools of imperialism around the world, told that they were superior to other peoples, even as they were treated as expendable commodities, both on the battlefield and in the workforce. We had the anniversary of the Battle of the Somme, the beginning of the Battle of the Somme, where, you know, almost 30,000 people, British soldiers, most of them working class backgrounds, were slaughtered in one day as expendable cannon fodder for the British war machine. You know, the death toll, of course, from that battle has increasingly been seeing there are no living survivors of the First World War. It's a war that has been whitewashed and the media has tried to portray it as glorious, when, of course, it was just killing fields. It was just working class people being sent to the slaughter in the name of empire, in the name of, like, war profiteers and capitalist financiers and industrialists who were profiting from the war effort, and bondholders. You know, millions of Britons have died in the name of ruling class lies. The same lies that now drive some of them to attack and beat down immigrants that they perceive as outsiders. And the British people must confront and overcome the reactionary lies that have historically kept them in chains, kept them subservient to a ruling class elite, and at odds with other proletarians around the world. And remember the noble history of resistance that working people in England have carved for themselves, going back all the way to the 1381 Peasants' Revolt, when the feudal system was nearly brought to its knees in England. I want to share a quote from a man who my own grandparents would have listened to in England during the Blitz, when, of course, the threat of Nazi invasion was very real. In 1940, J.B. Priestley, a radical novelist and Yorkshire radical, who used to do postscript broadcasts on the radio during wartime Britain. And actually, once the immediate crisis of the Blitz was passed, these broadcasts were stopped because they were considered all too anti-establishment. But he said this at the time, in 1940. "It so happens that this war, whether those at present in authority like it or not, has to be thought as a citizen's war. There is no way out of that, because in order to defend and protect this island, not only against possible invasion, but also against all of the disasters of aerial bombardment, it has been found necessary to bring into existence a new network of voluntary associations such as the Home Guard, the Observer Corps, all the ARP and firefighting services and the like. They are a new type, what might be called the organized militant citizen, and the whole circumstances of their wartime life favor a sharply democratic outlook. Men and women with a gift for leadership now turn up in unexpected places. The new ordeals blast away the old shams. Britain, which in the years immediately before this war was rapidly losing much such democratic virtues as it possessed, is now being bombed and burned into democracy." And I think we should keep that quote in mind as we think about the Brexit and the various repercussions which have been forced upon the British people by international market forces, which no doubt will be devastating for many lives. But the response for that is not to submit. The response for that is to remain defiant and to organize and to mobilize as working class people and to reclaim a tradition of resistance which many people have forgotten, but which is still there. Xenophobic politics and the fascist movements they empower only serve to strengthen capitalism and unleash brutal violence in its defense. Such politics will drive Britain to its knees unless socialism can assert itself and fight for a Britain that is liberated from the tyranny of the profit motive. Working people must join hands in solidarity with the other races and peoples who have been fighting for liberation from global capitalism and imperialism, recognizing it and not its victims as the real enemy. Recognizing global capitalism as the enemy. Recognizing and rejecting the heritage of colonialism and empire in the name of an internationalist future of solidarity among peoples and nations. The struggle for liberation is painful. It is never safe. It is never safe. But the working people of Britain have shown that they are willing and able to tread this path. Let us hope that their march continues. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws that chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. Men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, that was Billy Bragg with The World Turned Upside Down, traditional English rebel song, which really harkens back to the days of resistance and the enclosure movement. You know, of course, Britain was the first capitalist country, and resistance to capitalism began there and has never ended. But like I said, I was going to talk about a chapter of my own work, proletarian God building the socialist future. I want to talk a little bit about that today, of course, and I really think this actually, you know, really expands on what I've been saying about the Brexit vote. What I really want to talk about is Chapter 8 of my book, which deals with an institution I call the Proletarian Guard, which is an institution of my own conception. It's technically something I'm proposing. Because I want to see the working class around the world assembled into an army in the pursuit of its own interests. I want to see proletarians from all lands joining hands within a global organization that will give them the power to turn the world upside down. I want a new political order that turns the downtrodden into giants. This is why I conceived of the Proletarian Guard as the institutional backbone of the Universal Republic, the federation of socialist states that I advocate for in my book. I oppose any and all political and economic unions that exist in the service of the capitalist class, and that includes the European Union and NATO, for they currently represent the greatest threat to human life and survival on this planet. This is why I call for a socialist federation to oppose this global threat and a global institution capable of mobilizing working class power on every continent in the struggle against capitalism. Self-determination for proletarians is only possible through solidarity, but international solidarity can only be built through proletarian institutions, not through capitalist ones like the EU. Which is no different from the IMF and World Bank in its class agenda. The Proletarian Guard, like the Communist International before it, but on a far larger scale, will provide the organizational, political, cultural, economic, and social framework for the world socialist revolution that is now required if there is to be a livable future for humanity. Because it is an organization of a new type, an organization that does not yet exist, the Proletarian Guard can only be described as an imperfect vision in my mind, and I'll try to describe it as best I can. The Proletarian Guard is the legislative branch of the Universal Republic, but unlike most legislative bodies in the world, it will be made up of every adult citizen. While every adult citizen may not be a representative on the leadership committees in the local communes, the regional and national assemblies, or the supreme assembly of the entire federation, all adult citizens in the Universal Republic are politically active. They will be politically active with the power to directly elect their chosen representatives and recall them if they no longer serve their interests. All adult citizens will likewise be empowered to participate in political and economic decision-making in their own communities, particularly with regard to decisions of economic planning and development. You know, they will give their input in these things. Because the representative structure of the Universal Republic is rooted in the direct political engagement of proletarians in their own communities, the entire governing structure will be rooted in the power of the people. Local representatives will be chosen by the people, who will then select representatives for the regional assemblies, who will then select representatives for the national assemblies, and who will then select representatives for the Supreme Assembly. The masses of the people will have the power to intervene politically at every level and possess supreme legislative authority, just like the Cuban people do today. Naturally, particularly with regard to economic planning and management, the Proletarian Guard will cooperate with the executive authority in order to ensure that economic planning is effective and consistent and determined in such a way that is beneficial to the entire federation, not just to certain areas. The Proletarian Guard is also an armed body. It will constitute an armed body in defense of the socialist state. As the name suggests, the Guard will not only empower the masses of the people to participate politically and economically in socialist society, but also empower them to defend that society. Every adult citizen will receive military training, and the population will be divided into four military groupings based on the degree of military training they possess, along with other factors. First echelon, consisting of volunteers who have dedicated themselves to the defense of socialism and committed themselves to a higher and much more regular degree of training, will be the first to mobilize in any crisis. Second echelon, consisting of younger, able-bodied members of the community, will be mobilized next if the crisis is too great for first echelon to deal with. Third echelon, consisting of older, able-bodied members of the community, will only be mobilized in extreme situations. Fourth echelon, consisting of citizens of advanced age, non-able-bodied citizens, and citizens engaged in essential services, will only be mobilized in a situation so grave that it threatens the survival of the community in question. As I've mentioned before, first echelon is the source of recruitment for the executive and judicial bodies of the Universal Republic. So even those bodies will ultimately issue forth from the people, from the Proletarian Guard. In the same way, the Proletarian Guard will also be responsible for maintaining public order, rather than a professional police force. While first echelon will play the greatest role in this regard, all citizens will receive basic training in law enforcement and will receive legal education in the laws of the socialist state. As I've previously mentioned, the professional police in the Universal Republic function as criminal investigators. Criminal investigators, not a security force. As the Committees for the Defense of the Revolution have demonstrated in Cuba, the people themselves are perfectly capable of enforcing the law in their own communities, given the proper tools and organization. Naturally, this will be done in cooperation with the judicial authorities. Education and the building of working class consciousness is perhaps the greatest role of the Proletarian Guard as an institution. As I've previously talked about, working class people around the world are conditioned from childhood to think of themselves in national, religious, ethnic, racial, and sectarian terms, and are effectively trained to fight and compete against one another by the education they receive from the capitalist system. The Proletarian Guard must educate working people, help them to understand that they are brothers and sisters in a common struggle against a common enemy, and that there are no barriers that can divide them. They must understand that they are not weak or worthless, but the builders of civilization who must reclaim what is rightfully theirs. They are not commodities, but creative human beings with the power to move mountains when they work together and stand in solidarity. In every society the Proletarian Guard operates in, it must strive to educate working people in these terms. From a young age, the citizens of the Universal Republic must be educated to develop their potential and to participate in and contribute to socialist society. After completing primary and secondary education, a citizen of the Universal Republic will undergo a 2-year period of training that, when completed, will initiate them into the Proletarian Guard as a full adult citizen. This coming-of-age ritual will consist of military training, law enforcement training, training in emergency first aid, training in firefighting techniques, in addition to training in political and economic decision-making and democratic participation. When this training is complete, they will be considered an adult and free to enter post-secondary education or choose a career path as they see fit. All citizens will experience this process together and will learn how to work together to overcome the challenges they are confronted with. This will prepare them for adult life in a socialist society. Above all, the Proletarian Guard is meant to unify working class people all over the world. within a single institutional framework that is capable of confronting and defeating the forces of capitalism politically, socially, economically, culturally, and militarily. It will be the ultimate incarnation of proletarian class power on a global scale, stronger than anything that capitalism can send against it. The people united will never be defeated, and any organization that mobilizes the people on such an unprecedented scale will be unstoppable. It will be the greatest political force ever known, and the greatest example of democracy and democratic power. The arisen proletariat in its billions, the proletarian god on the march, under the leadership of a worldwide revolutionary vanguard organization, the proletarian guard will bring about a worldwide socialist revolution and a worldwide socialist republic. And that's why I'm advocating for such an organization. That's why I write about it, why I propose it. It might sound like science fiction, but I believe it can and must become a reality. Working class people must claim control over the civilization that is rightfully theirs, which has been built through their blood, sweat, and tears. They have to defeat the exploiters who are destroying the world, frankly. Through exploitation, despoliation, and environmental devastation, amongst other things. We have no choice. The working class must be mobilized on a global scale. We must be mobilized to fight and defeat the forces of capitalism. We must be mobilized to fight and win. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Stop. Hi, I'm James Gordon, and you are fortunate enough to be listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
If you have a local business, event, or initiative that you would like to promote, CFRU can help you out. Free public service announcements are available to all not-for-profit events and organizations, while for-profits have the option to choose from an ad package that is competitively priced to give you the highest quality ad at the best deals available. A staff member will guide you through the entire process and ensure that you are pleased with the final result before it is put on air. If you are interested in having an ad or PSA run on our station, please contact outreach at cfru.ca for more information.
Hi, I'm Doug Blackwood. I've been hosting Seems Like Old Times for about 25 years now, featuring music and old radio memories from the 1930s to 50s. The show also focuses on issues and history-oriented subjects for older adults. If you know of something that would make a good topic of discussion or would like to hear a piece of music or old radio show repeated, why not email me at seemslikeoldtimes@cfru.ca. Seems Like Old Times, now on Sundays from 2 to 4 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM.
In retirement, I thought my husband and I would enjoy going places together. Our son's drinking interfered with our plans. We worried about him and our grandchildren and didn't know where to go.